everybody, and welcome back to That's Absurd. Please elaborate. I am Trace.
And I am Julian. We are the hosts of this show where we take absurd, silly, ridiculous questions from each other, from guests, from listeners like you, and then we try and answer them as best we can using actual, real, science-y research. And today, it's a spooktacular special.
We can't afford sound effects. So
hold on, let me go get some aluminum foil from my kitchen and wobble it in front of the mic.
Yeah. Spooky episode. Happy Halloween, Julian.
Thank you.
Do you have a Halloween costume?
Happy All Hallows Eve. Yeah, my costume is a cool guy in a cool graphic t-shirt.
My son is going to be the Hulk, because that's the only superhero he knows. And if you ask him what's on his t-shirt, he'll say Hulk, even if he's wearing like a t-shirt with dinosaurs. He just says Hulk. So we're going to give him the Hulk.
Everything's the Hulk.
Everything's
the Hulk to Raph.
He's always angry.
That's cool.
So that should be fun.
I've given zero thought to my Halloween costume this year. Oh, no. Oh, no. I'm going to be picking through the dregs of whatever's left at the nearby Spirit and just going to have to accept a triple XL sexy sailor uniform, which I did
honestly,
1 year.
I feel like you could pull that off, though.
And I look good. I look good. And I went to parties and people were like, oh, you're a slutty sailor. And I was like, excuse you, just because I'm dressed
sexy
in a revealing manner speaks nothing to my proclivity.
Yeah,
like, how dare you judge me? I made a statement that year. I told off a lot of dudes at a party. I felt good about
I'm
it.
I'm proud of you.
Thank
I'm
you.
Proud of you. What I do is throughout the year, I will leave a calendar invite on October 1st, and I'll just be like, Halloween costume ideas, and I'll just add them to that calendar invite.
Oh, man.
So October 1st, I get a little thing that's like 9 a.m. Here's the ideas that you'd had over the past year. You're going to be upside down Wolverine? I don't understand what that means.
My favorite last minute costume idea was, is I had nothing and I was going to a Halloween party that night, and I stopped by a craft store and I picked up a ton of yarn and the largest knitting needles I could find, and I wrapped myself in it and I stuck the needles through it, and I was a ball of yarn. So when I went to this big house party in Los Angeles, like, all of the girls who were dressed up as sexy cats, I could be like an accessory costume.
That's pretty smart.
I thought so. Smart. Until it started like constricting my breathing because I had wrapped myself in it with no forethought, and I basically turned the yarn into like a giant boa constrictor. I was like really struggling to breathe. It was not attractive.
You started turning red.
Yeah.
He's like, no, I'm fine.
Yeah.
I'm fine.
And I was also so weird because I would like, there were like six different sexy cats at this party, because of course there
of
were.
Course.
And I would like, some of them got it right away, and some of them I would like stand near them and they'd be like, what are you doing? Why are you here? And I'd be like, okay, never mind. I thought I was pretty clever. I'm going to go now.
It's fine. Maybe you're more of a wand toy kind of
sexy
cat. I don't know.
Sorry, this cat does not want to play. So, for our spooktacular episode, though, we have selected Halloween-appropriate questions. And my question, actually, that I'm going to answer, Trace, was asked by you.
It was, because this is something that I have thought about a lot.
Mm.
Your question is, could we live without a head? You know, like, because when I was a kid, I used to read Halloween stories, and the headless horseman was always freaky. But I was like, wait a minute, he's holding his head in one of his hands, so he only has one other hand to do anything with. And he's riding a horse, so really, like, why are you afraid of him in that, like, he doesn't have a stick or anything he can hit you with? He's holding his head in one hand. His hands are full. That's all I'm saying.
You
know, he's still scary because, you know, he's holding his head in a hand and it's yelling at you or something. I don't know how he's doing that without lungs. But anyway, I have so many questions. So I wanted you to maybe look into this for me.
I figured it would be Headless Horseman inspired. And it's funny you say he holds his head in his hands, because, like, the story, the version I've always heard is, like, his head is a jack-o'-lantern for some reason, right?
Yeah.
Because the Headless Horseman, the story goes, right, that, like, he was a Hessian soldier during the Revolutionary War, so, like, a mercenary, and he was, like, surveying the battlefield, and a dying enemy soldier, like, lit off a cannon, and it took his head clean off. Right?
Yeah.
But it's funny that you say he would carry it around, because I was thinking about this, and I was like, wouldn't his head be smashed like a grape? Like,
yeah, because
it got hit by a freaking cannonball. So he should be just carrying around like a mush of flesh.
Little Ziploc bag.
Like, he wouldn't have how would the skull be intact? Yeah. But anyway, that's neither here nor there.
But either way, even if he's carrying the pumpkin, you know, like the jack-o'-lantern, he's got to hold the reins of the horse that he's riding. Uh-huh. And then he gets off the horse and he has to tie up the horse, and then he has his pumpkin head is in one hand, and the other hand, his non-dominant hand, he has to like turn his one hand when he's, you know, it just doesn't make sense logistically.
Yeah.
I don't understand it. However, I do know that there are scientists working on human head transplants, which, let's be honest, is really a body transplant. So I know that there are people that are like working on, and there may be that, you know, there's always the chicken that gets its head cut off and still runs around. So there's like all these things about heads and being alive.
I feel like you did a lot of my research already, but
I did? Oh, I'm just making this
up. We're going to bring these things up. Don't you worry.
Okay.
We're
going
to get to that. I just, also still thinking about the headless horseman, though. You're right. Like, it's so impractical, but there's nothing scary about just a dude with a head, right? Oh no,
I guess that's true.
The headed horseman.
He's riding his horse upon the ground.
The dreaded headed horseman. Just a guy.
He's just
from Germany.
His name is probably Friedrich. Fred, what are you doing up there?
Oh, Fred, the guy with the head.
That's what they called it back in Germany.
Oh, no.
Fred the Head.
Fred
How you doing,
head.
Fred?
Why
Fred
you call the him Head? That? Well, because he's got a head. You know this German accent. Just a guy with a head. Terrifying.
That was like the first version of the Sleepy Hollow story. It was just like, well, it's a guy with a head, and he rides a
horse.
Why does he needs to not? There needs to be a thing. He needs to not have a head.
Why are you specifying that he has a head? Oh, it's terrifying. He can look. He can like acquire things visually and hear. Yeah, he's like really aware of his surroundings. He's got two hands that are free. Terrifying.
Terrifying. Think of all the things he can do with those hands.
Yeah.
No, we need to make this a little
different. The real monster all along was man, specifically Fred.
Fred
the Head. Okay, but aside from this, now as you pointed out, kind of silly headless horseman. There's a lot of stories of, you know, beheaded people doing things that are spooky where they still seem like they're alive for a little while. There's a couple examples of, you know, stories of people who were beheaded and then afterwards, you know, had reactions or did things, right? Of course, these people also almost always happen to be famous royals and whatnot, right? Like, it always has to involve some important... It can't just be Steve from down the block who was beheaded and then, like, had a facial expression, like, you know, tried to whistle or something. No.
Decapitation Steve.
Steve the headless. Steve the neck. So, like, for example... Anne Boleyn supposedly, after she was beheaded, tried to scream, right? And I always think it's funny. I remember we were listening to, before we released the episode on pizza, and you talked about how, like, oh, the margarita pizza supposedly was, like, presented to the queen because it had all the colors of the Italian flag. And basically, at this point, every time I hear a famous story that involves royals, I'm like, I'm just going to assume it's not true. I'm going to assume it's made up, and we needed somebody famous to base the story around. But anyway, so Anne Boleyn is one of these stories, or another famous historical figure is Charlotte Corday. If you don't recognize the name, she was a French woman, a French commoner, who was very angry at Jean-Paul Marat, who's one of the figures in the French Revolution. And she decided one day that she was gonna murder him. And so... while Marat was taking a bath, because he had a really bad skin condition, he was like in the bath, and this woman shows up from out of town, and she's like, I have the names of a bunch of conspirators that are plotting against the new, you know, French government. And he's like, oh, of course, let her in and let me talk to her. And then she murdered him in the bath. So, like, you know, everybody in France in the late 17, early 1800s, she was sentenced to the guillotine. Mm-hmm. And when they cut off her head, supposedly the executioner slapped it. And her face, quote, took on an angry expression, and her cheeks became flushed.
I know. How would her cheeks become flushed? She has no blood flow.
Great question. Okay, one more example, right, of these apocryphal stories, and then we'll get to actual science and stuff.
Okay, okay.
So as recently as 1905, there was a Frenchman condemned to the guillotine, which seems really recent, doesn't it?
That does seem recent. That's like not that long ago.
That's not long ago at all. It's 118
years. Like old grandma
years.
Ago.
So this man was sentenced to die. I shouldn't say that with such a cheerful chipper in my voice, but he was going to get executed anyway.
He was going to get killed.
So his name, and I'm going to butcher pretty much all the French names. I apologize.
Sure.
But his name was Langui. I can't say it.
No, say it. Totally. Go totally gringo. Just say it. Totally gringo.
It was Languili. And he was being observed by a doctor in the crowd named Dr. Gabriel Beery Rewooks. And I think
perfect.
I said this pretty accurately.
I think you nailed it. Yeah.
And when his head was lopped off, Beery Rooks called out the person's name. He said, quote, "I called in a strong, sharp voice, Languili. I saw the eyelids slowly lift up without any spasmodic contractions. I insist advisedly on this peculiarity, but with an even movement, quite distinct and normal, such as happens in everyday life with people awakened or torn from their thoughts." And it's
Whoa.
Like, yeah, I wonder what the beheaded guy might be thinking about. And then you call his name and he's got to be like, "Huh, what? Sorry.
I'm sorry. I was just lost in thought there.
I was just taking
thinking
it
about
all in.
How I would be screaming in torment, but I don't have any lungs. And just the peculiarity of that.
I just realized I'd left the oven on and then.
But I guess it doesn't matter because I've died.
I am dead. Okay, so these are all, right, stories of people seeming to live on for some time after decapitation.
Right. Post-body.
Yes. The thing is, there's pretty much no scientific reason that this should be possible at all, right? Mm. Because as you alluded to earlier, when your head gets, you know, slicey-sliced, your blood pressure in your head part of the body, as we experts call it, that drops dramatically. Now, I don't know if you've ever just like stood up too fast, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And almost passed out. But I can imagine it's something akin to that, right? So there was a doctor, Dr. Shiva Shanu. She's a senior research associate in clinical neuroscience at the University of Cambridge.
That's
and she says that basically, like, there are some facial reflexes that might survive for a few seconds or even minutes, but consciousness almost certainly disappears very quickly, at most within a second or two, right?
Hmm.
So Dr. Shani is saying that sudden drop in blood pressure is basically going to cause a loss of consciousness almost instantaneously when a person gets decapitated. And to me, that makes total sense.
It does. Yeah. Without any blood flow whatsoever. Because, I mean, even if there were an artery in your brain trying to pump things around, there's nothing to pump.
Yeah. There's no,
you know?
all the ends are open, right? Like it's not a complete system anymore that contains all the blood. It's
right.
Yeah, it's just a tube. It's like a hollow stretch
tube.
Of PVC pipe, basically.
If you went and blew in one side.
Yeah,
like a conch shell,
the head flute.
put your ear up to the
dead.
You hear the ocean.
The decapitated French nobleman, mon Dieu.
And you can hear the waters of the Seine.
I hear the beaches of Normandy.
This is awful. This is so bad.
Gross.
Gross.
Yeah. Super
Don't get
gross.
It on your shirt.
Yeah. So pretty quickly, too, the cells in the brain are going to start dying. The brain uses up a substantial amount of oxygen, right? About 20% of the oxygen that your body uses is just dedicated to keeping the brain going. So it's going to deplete through its oxygen supply pretty quickly. So it's not going to be able to like reset all the neurons to keep firing. There's going to be a buildup of, you know, toxic chemicals as a result. And within 3 to 6 minutes, these neurons are going to start dying off. So not only is this, you know, person, half person, I guess top 1/10th person.
8%. I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know. Just a little off
really
the top.
Really depends how much they like to eat.
Right. So not only is this former person going to pass out pretty quickly, but then they're going to be irretrievably dead within minutes. Like the yeah. all the cells in their brain are just going to die off fairly quickly.
Interesting to think about, though, that like I've always associated decapitation with like, okay, instant death. You cut off your head, you're dead, mm-hmm. right? But what you're sort of saying is, even though you're not conscious, what I'm hearing is their brain is still alive. Like their yeah. brain is still like if you were to just drown in water and you can't have any more oxygen coming in, your brain mm-hmm. is still alive for a while.
A little bit.
Like 6 to 8 minutes. So decapitation is the same? That's weird to think about.
Or
like the brain, even though it's not expressing things, the brain is still in there being like, sup? You gonna get some oxygen or what?
Anybody out there?
We got Hello? Any oxygen coming in? We got oxygen?
Please, sir. Look at you. Please, you had sir. All those
May
palaces
I have some oxygen?
And mansions. Now you
no,
just want
Aaron
a
Aronson,
bit of oxygen.
Get out of here. Go back to your sticks.
Sometimes I think about Aaron Aronson, the medieval British peasant with mud piles and sticks, and I just start laughing. I just like pause in the kitchen. I'm just like, Aaron and his free sticks.
And free will sticks.
His free sticks is all he's got.
At least he's got his head.
More than that, Anne Boleyn. Anyway. So it's funny you bring that up, because you can also think about not necessarily decapitation, but just like normal clinical death and how we define it, right? Like when the heart stops, somebody's pronounced dead. But they have done studies, though, on brain activity post clinical death. There's a neuroscientist, Ajmal Zemar. He's from the University of Louisville. And in a 2022 study, Zemar and his colleagues, they looked at the activity in a dying brain as a patient was dying, so before and after clinical death. And they found that 30 seconds after the heart stopped beating, the brain waves were still going. So this pattern of neural activity was still rippling back and forth across the brain. And interestingly, he said the pattern that they fired in is like the gamma pattern, which is a pattern that you also see when people are recalling things. So he speculated, because, you know, obviously he couldn't ask the person. He can't shake the guy and be like, what's happening?
What are you thinking about? And his eyelids opened in a way that would be, he was lost in thought. Sorry, I just was thinking back to what you just said.
Right. I'd love that. Like he had something else on his mind. But he compared it to like stories when people who have near-death experiences say like, oh, I saw my life flash before my eyes. And he's like, well, maybe these patterns of brainwave activity are similar to what people who are recalling memories exhibit. Yeah. Maybe there's a connection there. But again, he didn't like patently say, yeah, that's what's going on, because it's kind of hard to know for sure. So, yeah, it's fascinating that like, you know, your heart stopped beating, but your brain still, as long as it can go, will keep going. Right.
Wow.
Now,
gross.
Going back to maybe surviving without the head. We talked about the head coming off and then the head living.
Yeah.
But if you think about the Headless Horseman story, especially the pumpkin version where he's not carrying around his actual head, but like the pumpkin, it's not really the head that's still alive. It's the body.
I love where this is going.
Right?
Wow. That's fun to think about.
So question might be like, how long could a body survive without a head? And in this instance, let's talk about chickens.
Chickens.
So you've heard probably like, oh, running around like a chicken with its head cut off as an expression, right?
Yeah.
But there's a famous chicken called Mike. Mike the Miracle. Miracle Mike. Magic Mike? No, that's a different thing.
No. I mean, that chicken can dance, let me tell you.
Miracle Mike the Headless Chicken. So this is a chicken in 1945... This farmer, his name was Lloyd Olson, living in Frutia, Colorado. So he's got his mother-in-law over for dinner. So Lloyd's preparing the food. And according to Lloyd, he says, well, you know, I know that she loves some roast chicken neck specifically. So he's trying to cut off the head of this chicken while leaving as much neck intact. So he lops off the head, and he, in doing so, misses the jugular vein of this chicken, an ear, and most of its brainstem. And the chicken didn't die.
Ooh.
Yeah. So right afterwards, right, like the Mike, the headless chicken. First of all, I'm just going to make this assumption. I don't think the chicken was named before they decapitated it, you know?
Oh, probably not. Yeah,
which
you're
is
right.
Kind of dark when you think about it. Like
they named him after they'd cut off most of his brain.
Yeah. Yeah. Like they had more empathy for this animal when it was basically like a walking corpse,
like
which
maimed.
Is
oh my God.
Bananas. Anyway, just a weird, really gross thought to
At
throw
least
out
didn't
there.
Name it bananas. Bananas the headless chicken.
That would be cute. So they cut off the head of this chicken. And yeah, Mike's body, what's left of Mike, was still kind of running around as they are known to do. But then it settles down and it starts pecking at the ground for food, but with its stump. And then it tried to like preen its feathers, but you know, again, with its stump. So it was still doing
chicken things,
sans head.
Oh, gross.
So Mike
bleeding everywhere.
Mike falls asleep in the barn, and Olsen finds him the next day with his stump, like he's trying to tuck it under his wing, like how birds, you know, sleep. And the farmer, Lloyd Olsen's like, you know what? I'm gonna keep this chicken alive.
What?
So, yeah. So
Lloyd.
I know, you maniac.
Yeah, Lloyd, what is wrong with you?
I know. So Lloyd says that he did it, like, preparing for his dinner. Now, his great-grandson later said that they were just decapitating chickens like you do to get them ready for market. And, like, basically this one chicken, for whatever reason, didn't die. My favorite part about the great-grandson story is apparently, according to him, Lloyd would take this headless chicken, like, into town. And then he would, like, bet people a beer that, like, a chicken could survive without its head.
Oh, no.
And I just want to say,
Lloyd,
if anybody ever comes up to you with a really specific bet, don't take it.
I bet you that a man who is 6'2" could survive with only one big toe.
Yeah, right?
I bet you, like, he could. I bet you.
No way, 6'2" man whose feet I currently can't see. There's no... You're on. Like, how...
I bet you a whole beer.
Yeah. Like, it's so suspicious to be like, hey...
Hi, stranger at the bar.
Just bringing it up for no reason.
Ooh, long week, huh? Long week. Long week for me, too. Yeah. Hey,
Yeah. Hey, you got chickens on your farm anyway.
Yeah, I got chickens on my farm.
You think a chicken could survive without the head? I
oh, definitely not. Definitely not.
No. Why do you ask? I don't know. No, but you want to put a beer on it? Like, just...
Yeah, but where are we going to get the chicken? Like, well, opens his jacket.
Had it here this whole time. Say that. I thought you had a weird lump rustling around under your coat.
Why is it bleeding? Oh, gross.
Oh, yeah. So apparently also it would try and cluck, but it would just make gurgling noises, which is disturbing.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
No.
But he kept this chicken alive by, like, dropping water into the stump. And, like, injecting food with a syringe and then, like, clearing out mucus that would build up with the syringe.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Do you want to take a guess how long Mike lived?
I mean, longer than I would have wanted.
Okay. Which is...
A week. I don't know. A day. Like, a few days. Days.
Hours, days,
a couple
months,
days.
What?
Yeah. Days.
Mike lived for 18 months.
Oh, that's awful for Mike.
It's a pretty...
I feel
terrible
so bad
existence
for Mike.
For Mike. Wow. Yeah, I feel bad for
wow.
this chicken.
For Mike.
Mike only died because they were traveling. They were taking him to, like, sideshows and stuff and having people like, come see the amazing miracle chicken. So they were traveling. They were in a motel and they woke up one night to hear Mike I don't know how to say it if this is right, but choking on mucus, and they had left the syringe they used to clear the mucus at the sideshow where they were
that
day. So they didn't have any way to clear the clog. And Mike, sadly, finally, mercifully,
was allowed to die.
His body was allowed to join the rest of him what I assume is chicken heaven. Thank you.
maybe the lowest point in our 15 episodes.
This is the stupidest moment.
Also, I thought of a name. I think I would name the chicken Demi. You know, like, because half a chicken.
Because
like Demi. Demi chicken. Demi the chicken.
Oh, just the my thought God. That I had. Cluck Van Cleve.
Van Cleve is pretty good. Or just Cleve.
Cleve. Clevis.
Clevis.
Clevis and Cluckhead. Oh. So. So.
I've never clucked Ave Maria before, but I feel pretty good about it.
My hands are numb from laughing too hard.
Think about how Mike felt.
Hyperventilating. Oh, poor Miracle Mike. All right, so let's talk about though why this was possible, and the reason is a chicken's brain is surprisingly far back in its head. Like if you look at a picture.
Yeah, I'm picturing a chicken.
Chicken anatomy. As a matter of fact, I've found a photo, which I'm going to share with you in the chat, ooh, and perhaps we can post in our Instagram.
Yes,
I'm
please.
Go ahead and post this here. Okay, so look where
The
brain of that chicken is.
That totally makes sense. It's behind its eyeballs.
Like
eyeballs are in front of the brain.
Yes, it's really, really far behind the eyes. So if Lloyd's original story is to be believed that he was trying to preserve as much neck for those tasty chicken necks that his mother-in-law loves so much, it would make sense that he would basically leave most of the brain intact.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
An earlier story, by the way, said it was the brain stem was still intact, and then I found a later, I guess, chicken scientist who was like, well, now we know that that's really like the entire brain instead of just like the brain Lucky. Stem. Yeah, the experts they found for this were amazing, by the way, because one of the guys, Dr. Wayne J. Kunzel, is a poultry physiologist and neurobiologist, which, what a niche.
Wow, yeah.
What an absolute niche. But anyway, so they think that the brain was left mostly intact. And then on top of that, this chicken happened to have like a blood clot fortuitously as it was being decapitated that kept it from bleeding out. Because that's the other important thing we talked about, right? It's like just general loss of blood is going to be an issue, even if the brain's still intact.
So it didn't die.
So it basically like its brain was mostly still there and the hole that it might have bled out from was corked up and Mike could keep on clucking for another 18 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jeez, talk about a miracle.
Yeah.
Oh,
way to go.
So
way to go, Mike.
Is this just a thing for chickens or are there other animals that this could happen for?
It has happened with multiple chickens, but
oh, wow.
It makes sense to me because like we breed and decapitate a lot of chickens. Eventually it's going to happen probably more than once if it's possible at all. Right.
Right. Right.
There are other instances where say like people who decapitated a rattlesnake or some sort of venomous snake like later would try and dispose of the head like 20 minutes later and the head would bite them and then this person would be envenomed and die.
Envenomed?
Yeah.
I've never heard that word, but I love it.
Great word.
It's a
great
word.
By the way, thing that drives me crazy that I'm going to just clarify right now is snakes are venomous, not
poisonous. Yes,
right.
Great point. Thank you for pointing it out.
That's the thing. If it bites you and you die, it's venom. If you bite it and you die, it's poison.
That's right.
Anyway, that's just a little, that's neither here nor there. I've read that maybe it's because the snakes being cold-blooded, they can survive longer because, you know, their systems aren't metabolizing as much. Like, so the cells stay alive and then this head of a rattlesnake or whatever 20 minutes later bites this person and exacts revenge, which in this case, I'm rooting for the snake because fun fact, rattlesnakes don't want to bite you.
No.
They're mostly trying to get you to go away.
Yeah.
So,
well, and if you think about it, venom is like very, it's a energy expensive thing to make.
Correct.
So you don't want to just like waste it. You know, you're not like think of Jurassic Park. There's not going to be a dinosaur. That dinosaur that spits acid does not exist. Why? Because the acid that would spit would be very difficult for it to make. It would take a lot of energy to make it. So it's not just going to spit it for fun. If it's going to eat you anyway, it's just going to eat you.
Yeah. especially for, as we established, like a cold-blooded animal that might take a lot longer because its metabolism is a lot, you know, is slower. So to make this venom will take longer.
Yeah.
Yeah. The whole point of the rattle is to get you to go away.
Be like, yo, I'm right here.
So if you see one, a lot of people get bit because they like step over a log when they're hiking and the rattlesnake is on the other side of it. And the snake's like,
and they didn't know.
And freaks, it like is surprised and bites them. But usually like if you've seen it and it's rattling at you,
just
like,
go the other way.
Just go away. It's not going to like come after you.
Yeah, it's fine.
I'm also going to add the caveat that I am not a snake expert. So if you take this advice and get bitten on a trail, I'm going to hold myself harmless in this instance. But anyway, let's talk about people, though. And if Miracle Mike's situation might happen with a person.
Could I get partially decapitated?
Yeah. And the thing is, because of the fact that our brain is pretty much all entirely in our skull, you can't be fully decapitated and expect your body to persevere, to just gut it out, walk it off.
Literally gut it out.
Like so the brainstem is the part of your brain that connects directly to the spinal cord, right? And it controls a lot of automatic functions like your breathing and your heart rate.
Mm-hmm.
And if that is intact, like these basic functions, you might be able to maintain, right? Like people who experience cerebral death where the rest of their brain tissue dies, they can still have some of these bodily functions and their body can get all eye of the tiger and keep going.
But they're not alive.
So there are instances of people with like serious brain damage that keep going, or people, really extraordinary cases where like most of their skull is filled with cerebrospinal fluid and they pretty much have like a little bit of like the rest of the brain and then like a spinal cord and they're still alive. In the course of my research, though, I found what I think is the most horrifying thing to consider, and that is just the brain itself being kept alive, wholly separate from the body, from the head, from everything else. Is it possible?
Yeah.
There are researchers. There's a researcher named Dr. Marco De Curtis.
Oh, no.
He is associated with the Carlo Besta Neurological Institute.
Oh, no.
And he does experiments. He's very focused on epilepsy and what triggers it and observing the brains during epilepsy. And in order to study it, he has developed a method of removing guinea pig brains and keeping them alive and then inducing seizures to observe what happens.
Oh, my gosh. This is a Halloween episode if I ever heard one.
It's horrifying, right? He's got multiple studies. For example, one from 2015, the in vitro isolated whole guinea pig brain as a model to study epileptiform activity patterns.
Oh my God.
Seizure induced acute glial activation in the in vitro isolated guinea pig brain from 2021.
Like, oh my God. So he keeps the brains alive to study epilepsy.
Yes.
But
separate from.
Aren't the brains like really upset? They're not attached to their body.
How would we know?
Oh,
how
Jesus.
Would it? This is the horror of the question, right?
The horror.
It's totally disconnected from any sort of outside stimuli or way to communicate with the world. It's just a brain in isolation where the tissues are still kept alive.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
And so it can be done, at least with guinea pigs.
With guinea pigs, who knows? It doesn't work in rats, which are things that we, you know, in science use a lot because they're a good model for a lot of things in humans. So I have no idea. There's also, you know, in neuroscience, there's techniques for preserving like slices of brain tissue
to keep them alive.
Hours, yes, so you can study them.
Bathed in stuff that, nutrients and stuff, that makes sense.
Yes, exactly.
But you're just keeping the cells alive, really.
Yes, yes. And again, that's for a matter of hours. But like a guinea pig brain in a jar, who knows how long it could live. So long as it's provided with nutrients and, you know, the oxygen and the toxins are cleared away.
I mean, if you think about it, aren't we just brains in jars?
Ooh. Yeah, but my jar has like eyes and a mouth. And
it's got some squishiness.
My jar feels when things touch my jar. So
I can feel
so
my
okay
jar.
With it. Yeah. What is the skull but a brain jar?
Nailed it.
Oh, so there God. You go. There have been instances of chickens surviving for a long time. There's guinea pig brains
that are just living in jars. Poor little darlings.
Oh no!
Wow.
But as for whether the headless horseman could survive post cannonball, or whether Anne Boleyn actually tried to scream, the answer to all that is
not
gonna happen. Sorry, but great news. So yeah, the real one you have to be terrified of is the horseman with the head. Still, just the guy on the horse.
Just a guy with a horse.
Yeah,
coming around, Fred. Knocking on the door. Hello. I would like to murder you.
When the rooster sings Ave Maria at dawn, Fred comes calling.
On that note, I think let's take a break and then come right back with Could a Horse Be an Apex Predator?
Welcome back to That's Absurd, Please Elaborate, the spooky episode.
That was pretty good.
That was great. I am one of your two hosts with a head, Julian, joined by Trace. And after we've explored the implications of losing your head, Trace now has the question, what if horses were apex predators?
That's right. So this question actually comes from a listener, Meg.
Hey, y'all. My name's Meg. I'm sending this in from Lowell, Massachusetts. I'm a big fan of the show. I found you guys on Nebula, and I'm just loving it so far. I was talking to my partner a little while ago about why he doesn't like horses. I knew that he didn't like horses, and I assumed it was the normal stuff, like they're big and they're kind of jumpy. They make people nervous. People get hurt, whatever. But he said animals of that size should have the instincts of apex predators, but instead they have the instincts of prey, and therefore I don't respect them. So that kind of got me thinking, what would happen if horses were apex predators? How can horses earn the respect of my partner? Thanks, guys.
Honestly, I love the question. I love the premise. Meg, good job. Thank you for sending this question to us.
Meg's part. So I don't respect them.
Not even like
I fear them. Just like, wow, horses, you really let everybody down by not being apex predators, and therefore I am judging you.
Yeah, I think that is a good way to put it.
And hey, somebody who found us on Nebula. Shout out to everybody over on Nebula. It's a great, great network of creators making stuff.
Love it. Yeah, Meg, I think, has hit on something that a lot of people feel. A lot of people, I think, love horses and want them to be cooler than they actually are. I mean, think about all of the things that we do to horses. I'm not going to say they're not.
You just upset all the horse girls.
Every Lisa Frank person out there is
our
mad.
Horse listeners that I'm sure we have many of. Wow.
I'm not here to redesign the horse. It's already been done. We've given horses wings. We've given horses horns. We've given horses basically all the little things. We've given horses Hawaiian shirts and cartoon shows. We've given them everything that we have ever
needed.
Yeah,
and drinking problems. We've given horses.
Exactly. We've given them everything that we've given ourselves. However,
yeah, we've really modified horses quite a bit.
Yeah, and so I thought this is a really fun question. So thank you again, Meg, for sending it in. So when you think of an apex predator, what do you think of?
My cat.
Okay.
Specifically, yeah. I mean, she's small. She's like shrunken down, but she's terrifying. So I guess a bigger cat. Big cats then. Yeah. There's a long way to get to big cats.
No, you got
like
there. You got there in the end. That's the important thing. I feel like your hands.
Like a small cat, but big.
Your hands are still numb from the previous.
My
brain
is deprived of oxygen is what it is. I'm just a brainstem at this point.
That's an excellent example of an apex predator. An apex predator is
a big cat, like a lion, or a leopard, or a tiger.
Those are all big cat apex predators. Predator-prey relationships is one of the first things that we learn about in like high school biology or even like elementary school biology. And predators, there are many, many predators. Some of them are preyed upon by other things. You know, some predators like a raccoon is not the biggest predator in its ecosystem. Some things will eat raccoons and raccoons will eat other things. And so the apex predator, if you're unaware of this term, is the predator that nothing else really preys on. Not to say it never gets preyed upon, but it's like very unlikely that it will get preyed upon. So prey animals are anything that is regularly eaten by other animals. Classic example, rabbit. A rabbit is prey for a fox, right? The chickens are prey for foxes. Foxes are eaten, though, by bears and coyotes, eagles. Even large snakes will eat foxes, so they're not apex predators. Then you think, eagles. Wow, eagles, the majestic bald eagle. They are not an apex predator. They can be eaten by hawks, bears, wolverines, alligators, and raccoons, which will eat the eggs of eagles and eaglets. So
I feel like eating the egg doesn't count as defeating an apex predator.
Yeah, it does. Yes.
No. If I travel back in time and I defeat Muhammad Ali as a baby, I'm not the greatest boxer of all time.
This is true. This is
true. You know, what I did was I punched a baby.
But there are some animals that are not regular prey for anything, and that would be like bears and wolverines and, you know, other really usually large predatory animals. They're not always carnivores entirely. Some of them are omnivores, like bears. But these are the apex predators. They're the tops of their respective food chain. Apex, it means, you know, top. And it does mean that they eat more than they are eaten, but it does not mean that they are never eaten. And it does not mean that they are the biggest or the smartest or the most vicious or the top of their dog pile necessarily, except for in this one way that we've decided is important. An apex predator is different from a keystone species because a lot of people think they're the same thing. So think of a wolf. It's an apex predator. However, it's also a keystone species. It keeps populations in check. And if you remove it from the ecosystem, it can cause all sorts of problems. Not every apex predator is a keystone species. I was doing my research and I myself was getting confused about that. So
yeah, or like a prey item can be a keystone species. Yeah. Like a lot of things that are at the base of the food chain are really important.
Right. Like if you think of like a wolf in Yellowstone being a keystone species, you could also argue, I'm guessing, I'm not an ecologist, that elk that the wolf eat are also a keystone species because without them, you know, it could be a big problem. So yeah. Common examples of apex predators we've sort of listed already: lions, jaguars, leopards, tigers, orcas, sharks, bears, eagles, wolves, crocodiles, yada, yada, yada. Okay. However, I want to break it up a bit and say there are also small things that are apex predators. Tasmanian devil, size of a small dog, apex predator.
What?
Moray eel, apex predator.
I believe that.
Giant otter, which also is still an otter, is an apex predator.
Also, those things, the moray eel is also kind of like alien because it's got like the mouth within the mouth thing.
They're freaky. They're super
freaky. Alien and predator.
Yeah, that's true.
And then you said giant otter?
Giant otter. It's like five feet. It's big. They're a big otter.
That's a big otter.
Yeah. And in New Zealand, you listed and nailed it right out the gate, Julian, apex predator, Felis catus, the common house cat.
Because
they have no predators there. And so what'll end up happening is they will, you know, kill a lot of birds and nothing will eat them. They've actually extincted 9 native bird species in New Zealand and put 30 others on an endangered species list. So please spay and neuter your pets, everyone.
Yes.
And don't let your cats outside. This isn't frickin' Flintstones. Just keep the cat inside.
The kiwi, right, like not the fruit, the bird, of New Zealand is really threatened because of introduced predators, cats, and then I think stoats are another really big problem for kiwis because they eat the eggs.
Interesting.
So
apex predator, if we were thinking about a horse as an apex predator, you know, these predator prey relationships are completely different for every animal, and an apex predator doesn't necessarily prey on all of the things below it. It just preys on some of the things below it. And they're molded by millions of years of adaptation, and they don't just happen once and then they stay that way forever. They're constantly evolving and changing in these arms races.
So, unless you're a crocodile, you've figured everything out, and you don't need to change, baby.
You're perfect
just the way you are. Oh my God, an invisible stealth log covered in armor and teeth? Yeah, you're good.
You're perfect.
Evolution got that one right tens of millions of years ago and was like, you're no notes.
Beautiful.
Singing to an alligator. It's true.
So, common traits of apex predators, which we would need to get into the horse somehow. They would be called foraging or trophic traits. We would have teeth for tearing and grabbing, claws for ripping and grabbing, because most apex predators, you got to prey on something. You also, though, need a pretty large size. So horses have that. That's cool. However, the things that other apex predators do have is like slower reproductive rates. Horses breed pretty quickly, so they'd have to slow that down. Horses live pretty quick. They are always on the move, running around. Apex predators are not. They sleep more. They conserve their energy until they can hunt or need to go and get food. They typically have large territories and have some competitive advantage over their prey. So they either have a really good sense of smell, they have really good camouflage, they have good eyesight, good stamina, stuff like that. Whereas prey animals, which are also called vulnerability traits, they breed more quickly because they have to be replaced quickly as they are preyed upon. They're in motion more. They usually continue moving. They have to react quickly, so they run and evade. They typically have large social groups, whereas predators typically have smaller social groups. You know, just all sorts of things. They have defensive body traits, and they typically notice changes in their environments. For example, even a horse, which we'll get into this in a second, about eyesight. Horses don't have amazing eyesight, but they can remember what they've seen. And so if you're like on a path with a horse and you're riding it along and the horse has been on this path before, it may be fine. But if you like all of a sudden there's brand new trash cans on the path, the horse might be freaked out by them because it knows the path, but it doesn't know what that is. And
hey, that wasn't here yesterday.
Yeah, exactly,
what is this?
Exactly. Horses are really nervous neighbors. They're just like, whoa, 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 whoa,
whoa, whoa. Why are you bringing your trash out every Tuesday? What's going on here? You trying to eat me? He's trying to eat me.
Exactly. So right now, horses can see 200 to 210 degrees in each eyeball.
Wow,
so
think each eyeball.
So think of where the horse's eyes are on its head. It can see basically in front of it, and there is some overlap. So they have binocular vision in front. Both eyes can see the front of about 60 degrees. But the rest of it, they can see all the way to their back. They can see their hindquarters. They can see where their legs are, which is why you're not supposed to sneak up on a horse like directly behind it, because it will kick you because it cannot see you. But it can see
that.
You if you're just a little bit to the side. And that's great for prey who need to see harm coming from anywhere. But most predator animals have two eyes in the front. And so they can see mostly in front of them and not really behind because they're not being preyed upon as often. So they don't need to, they turn around. So,
and it's really important they have that forward like depth perception for when they strike.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
Like, I think about, we had a pet jumping spider, because of course we did, because eventually we will have every pet that you can imagine.
Sure.
And what's really interesting about jumping spiders, like other spiders that just rely on things wandering into the web, their eyes can point in like all directions, but jumping spiders have two huge eyes. It actually makes them kind of cute.
They are kind of cute.
And they point forward because they have to be able to gauge like how far they need to jump and where their prey is. So yeah, that's a very common trait.
Right. So first thing we're gonna have to change about horses, smaller social groups. Second thing we're gonna have to change about horses, they breed slower, so they might not breed as often, so they're not having as many foals. Third thing, we're gonna have to put their eyeballs more in front of their face rather than to the side.
Wait, are you telling me apex predators have no friends and no sex life? So like all these people that are like, I'm an alpha wolf. It's like,
honestly,
oh, sad.
You said it. I didn't say it.
Nailed
you said
it.
Yeah, nailed it.
Nailed it. No friends, no sex life.
Right now, by the way, horses cannot see their mouths. So when they eat stuff, like when you feed them a carrot, they don't necessarily know what they're looking at, like what they're about to eat. They just know that it's coming. They also can't see their noses. Like, so you and I can see our nose, but we can't see our mouth either. Do you never think about the fact that you can't see your mouth?
I hate that you said that out loud, because now it's the only thing I'm going to think about ever again.
You're welcome. You're making such funny
faces. I hate it. I'm trying to see it. I'm trying to get a good look at it.
So the next thing we're going to need to change about horses. Most apex predators are omnivorous or carnivorous. And there's this thing that omnivores and carnivores can do that ruminants and other kind of plant eaters don't necessarily need to do. Any guesses what that might be?
Omnivores, is it tear flesh?
Vomit. It's vomit.
Vomit.
Horses cannot vomit.
Wow.
They don't have the ability to do that.
There's so many fun facts in this episode.
Right? So they have to, omnivores, you know, you end up eating something, you need to get it out of your body, like usually a toxic substance. You eat a lot more different things, whereas horses are mostly eating grass. So they're like, and other plant matter. And so it's just less common that they're going to eat a super toxic thing. So they don't vomit. And so they would need to be able to vomit, which would involve a lot of, you know, changes to their body. But that's okay. So what happens is when you vomit, there's all these involuntary muscles contracting and relaxing. There's the diaphragm spasms and pushes the contents out and everything's open and it closes the spaces in your breathing area so you don't get vomit in your breathing area, assuming everything works. perfectly. And then your brain has all these neurons that are specifically designed to do this for you. And horses' neurons don't really do that. They don't have all of those things there ready to go. Mm. And so we need to make some of those changes. However, you know, aside from that,
if we changed that first and made the horses vomiting, maybe the smaller friend group and reduced sex life would take care of itself.
Just come along with it.
Let's simplify, you know, and just we're going to skip the first two steps. Just jump right to three.
Horses can vomit now and all their social
horses
groups are just like
now. The puking horse with eyes that stare straight ahead in an unsettling manner.
Oh, I already hate it.
That's what the headless horseman should be riding.
So the Journal of Animal Ecology and another journal called F1000 Research, it might not be a journal, it might just be a company. They did a whole study on apex predators, which, by the way, I think we should name this apex predator horse. Not like Chuck or whatever, or like Stacy. I'm talking Stacy, the apex carna horse.
Stacy, the predatory horse.
Welcome to Stacy the Predatory Horse.
Ooh, I know what we'd call them. Nightmares.
Oh, that's so good. Oh, that's so good. Okay, so apex nightmares would have eyes in the front of their head. They'd be able to vomit. They would have a lot fewer babies. Let's just make them blue, because why not? Then it looks because it looks like the Denver Airport Blucifer. Statue. If
As
you haven't seen it, Google
by all
it.
The conspiracy
it's great.
Theories about the statue at the Denver Airport.
Right. So according to these Journal of Animal Ecology and F1000 Research, they did the studies on specifically traits of apex predators, and they found that there are different types. There's ambush predators, ballistic interception predators, and pursuit predators. So an ambush predator needs to have good camouflage, good senses. It can't be too big. So think of like big cats, right? They're sneaking up on their prey. They're in the tall grass and then pow, they jump out and attack. They also could be like a octopus. They're blending in, you know, you have the sit and pursue ballistic interception kind of predators as well. These are both kind of mixed in. And so you have like octopuses that sit there and they wait until somebody comes, swims by and they ambush it. Got it. Or like the ballistic interception might be a cheetah. It sneaks up, gets close, and then pow, gets the like last 100 feet as fast as possible to get to it.
Right.
Then there, the thing I think the apex nightmare could do is pursuit, which is a human style pursuit predator, where we just run. Horses can run so well. They are such good runners. They can run for miles and miles, 20 to 40 miles without stopping or getting tired.
Wow.
They have really good lungs. They have good circulation, so they can do that. Unfortunately, horses are also kind of dumb, so if they have a rider, they will ride themselves to death. They will run until they die. Because you're scaring them. Essentially, you just keep scaring them, they'll just keep running.
You've really taken advantage of that prey reflex, right?
Yeah, exactly. That is what we do when we ride them like that. Like in movies and stuff, where like they ride all night, and it's like that horse is going to die when it gets to where it's going, which is too bad. So you have all of these things. You could have a horse that does this too. It has this pursuit behavior. So if you're taking this prey animal, you're taking some of its advantages and you're turning it into a predator animal. You're, you know, giving it stereoscopic or like binocular vision. You're giving it like the ability to vomit up toxins. You're giving it the ability to like pursue prey for long periods. They still couldn't use tools or anything like that without some, again, major changes to their body. And right now, horses, they have safety in numbers, so they have pretty big social groups. They birth a new foal every year, so we're looking at a lot fewer. Lions are doing like 1 to 2 cubs for every 2 years, or 1 to 6 cubs for every 2 years. So there are just a lot of different changes that would need to happen in order for horses to become these nightmares. They don't have claws, so what would they do when they get to the prey? They'd have to literally outrun it and exhaust it until it falls over, which is what some other persistence hunters do. However, they could just, you know, do that and then kill the thing by stomping on it like they do now, because they do that. So while doing research on this, and since this is the Halloween episode, I'm going to read parts of a letter to you from an October 2002 issue of The Horse magazine. It is literally a magazine for people who own horses. I'm going to try and edit it on the fly a little bit, but because it's a little graphic. I was driving to his farm, and I got near his driveway. I noticed one of his horses trying to reach something through the fence that faces the road. I turned and stopped for a moment, to see if I could see what the horse was trying to get. I walked up to the edge of the fence, and the horse, 75 feet away from me, pulled its head back through the fence and had a dead rabbit in its mouth. The horse trotted, carrying the rabbit, and at first I chuckled to myself, thinking this horse was hard up for something to play with. As I continued to watch, I became shocked as the horse placed the rabbit on the ground, placed a front hoof on the part of the rabbit to hold it down, and bit into its belly, tearing it apart. I stood there for 10 minutes watching as the horse ate most of the rabbit's soft tissue. It must have been freshly killed by a car because it didn't seem to be stiff. Needless to say, I was in shock because I've never heard of a horse eating meat of any kind. I went back up to the barnyard where there were goats and chickens running in a small pasture shared with horses. About 5 minutes, we sat on a fence and all the horses made their way up to a small barnyard area. This is a separate day. My friend noticed they seemed to be a little spooked or jittery. We could not believe what we saw. It couldn't be sure it was the same horse, but one was chasing one of the goats around, and we laughed at the playfulness. Then all of a sudden, the horse picked the goat up off the ground and shook it violently. It was hurt badly before it dropped it from its mouth. Before we could get down to the fence to run over to the goat, it bit the underside of the neck and began to shake it wildly again. We both knew that there was no saving the goat. Then it put its hoof on the goat's neck, bent its head down, and began biting the goat's belly.
The horse has developed a taste for mammal blood.
The horse raised its head, covered in blood, and he was chewing away. We watched the horse continue to eat the goat. Meanwhile, other horses wandered up. One of the three reached into the cavity, got a bite, and raised her head while chewing. The other horses did the same. My friend and I were stunned at what we just witnessed. A couple of days went by, and I went back to visit again. He said he'd cleaned the blood off all the horses and groomed them, and at no time did the horses seem to get aggressive toward him at all. It just seemed as they were normal. There's been nothing else going on with these horses since. The events we saw with our own eyes are still a mystery. Neither of us is willing to believe that this is the first time this has happened. This was a letter to The Horse Magazine in the year 2002.
Those horses made a covenant with the devil, is what happened. They sacrificed a goat and partook in its blood.
And a rabbit as well.
That's like a pact with Satan if I've ever heard it. It literally sacrificed a goat.
And then its family all partook. It's crazy. So this was...
whinnied into the night air with their faces covered in the goat's blood. This is a horror movie.
Right? And this is one of three letters that they got. After they printed the first one, they got other letters from other horse owners about their carnivorous horses. And it turns out there were so many examples of this throughout history that a woman who was reading these wrote a book called Deadly Equines, The Shocking True Story of Meat-Eating Murderous Horses. And an excerpt from that book, she wrote, wow, quote, equestrian explorers and researchers from a variety of countries pooled their experiences, delved into obscure documents, reviewed rare books, and conducted interviews around the world. After 9 years of groundbreaking analysis, they found that 30 countries had stories like this over a space of nearly 4,000 years, with horses consuming 18 different types of flesh, including human beings. Julian, you can scream now.
Wow. Meg's partner. Any respect for the horses now?
You better.
Meg's partner?
You better.
You better, because they're coming for you. They can run for miles. They don't get tired.
And they'll just step on your neck and bite into your belly.
Tear into your soft underside.
Yep.
Yeah.
And
And then speak in a backwards nay to Baphomet.
It is fun to imagine a horse with sharp teeth or with claws, but it doesn't necessarily need them.
That's where my mind went, right? Was like,
me too. Then I found this.
Fangs, claws. Yeah. Definitely the forward-facing eye thing, which I think is objectively goofy.
Yeah.
Like, I would love to see a sketch of a horse with forward-facing eyes because it would look so wrong.
I mean, that's like BoJack Horseman kind of style of animation. This is what I wrote in the piece. I was just like, if we did redesign it, it would just look like an animated horse from like Ren and Stimpy BoJack Horseman or whatever, where we just like
Charlie the Unicorn.
Right. We just put the eyes in the front because it looks more like a person. However, they already eat meat. They just don't usually need to or want to, I guess.
They don't want us to see because they want to keep us unsuspecting.
Yeah.
We think we're the ambush predators, but the horses are playing the long game.
Yeah, maybe.
Woo.
Jeez.
Isn't that messed up?
That's actually kind of terrifying.
I'm never going to look at horses the same after reading that.
I'm never going to look at horses again, lest they see me and, and figure out where I live.
I'm just picturing it slowly chewing.
What I had pictured too when I saw this question was I imagined like historical horse riders, like the Mongol Empire, which was because like horses are from this area of Eurasia, right? Like these wide open grasslands, which makes sense, right? And so like the Mongol Empire was so successful because they were incredible horsemen and women, right? Like just they all had like five horses and they would use them like all cavalry army. And now I'm just like imagining add to the mix, oh yeah, and the horses are also bloodthirsty apex predators.
Yeah, maybe it's not that big of an imagine. They did do more research on this and they said they probably ate the soft tissue because they don't really have the teeth or the like gut available to break down any of the gristly or the like bones or anything like that. So unlike a carnivore, which would eat a lot of those connective tissues and things, they're just eating the parts that they can definitely digest. So it's not like they don't know how to do this if they want to. They just don't typically need to or want to.
They choose. They're like grass or giblets.
Yeah.
I'm
feeling grass.
This time.
So if they were apex predators overnight, it would be terrifying. They would be 2,000-pound animals that can run for miles. They would be able to knock you over and eat your guts, and it would be really amazing horror movie stuff.
It would be really good. Would they be as large, though?
Great question. I don't know. I mean, usually an apex predator is a large thing. Like, a lot of them are large, but as I mentioned, not all of them. So maybe they would get smaller over time. I also thought, like, maybe not only would their gut adapt and their teeth adapt and their eyes adapt, but maybe they would have, like, hoof adaptations. So it would be more, like, spiky. You know, maybe they would break in two and be more like the other ungulates where they have more like a cloven hoof instead of a single hoof. You know, maybe they would have a complete skeletal adaptation over millions of years where they would be able to run without using all four of their legs, in which case, again, we're back to BoJack Horseman other animated horses.
Yeah. No, to get back to, you know, Meg's partner's gripe with horses, right, is they're so large, but why are they apex predators? But a lot of larger animals are more often herbivores or omnivores because, like, when you think in terms of trophic levels, which is like how much energy is in the food, step before you, there's just way more energy available, like, from grass and foliage and a vegetative diet than there is from, like, a meat-eating diet. And, you know, only like a certain percentage of that energy like makes it to the next step.
Yeah.
So predators tend to not be super large, right? Like, I think like an orca or sperm whale right in the ocean. But like, you know, the blue whale is so much larger because it's eating, you know, krill, where there's tons and tons and tons and tons of little krill.
Yeah.
Or like horses and cows are big. Elephants, they're big. None of them are meat eaters.
Right.
Possibly very dangerous if you irritate it or threaten it or walk up right behind it and it freaks out.
Yeah.
But still not predators.
If you think about it, horses are constantly grazing now. There's a reason we call it grazing when we're like, oh, I'm eating throughout the day. It's like because the horse is literally grazing all the time to be able to have all of that energy so that when a predator does come, it can run away. But otherwise, they're just kind of, you know, trotting around until Link parachutes out of the sky on his little thing to land on its back. But before that, it's fine. You know, they're just kind of hanging out. So anyway,
still playing Tears of the Kingdom, I see.
Oh, yeah. I'm like 200 hours. Okay, so to wrap this all up, they might be able to kill goats and other small animals, but ultimately, as an apex predator, they would need a complete redesign. We'd have to go back to the drawing board. And humans would still be a better one. So, also horse tastes delicious, apparently. I've never eaten it, but it's supposed to be good.
I'm going to take your word for it. So. I don't know. Live and let live. That's my pact with the horses.
At this point, yes, please. No murders. Yeah. Thank you.
Please be nice to me, horses.
So, thank you again, Meg, for sending in your question. And I hope that your partner really respects horses a little more, because if not, watch out.
Well, thank you so much, Trace. This one was so much fun. The Halloween Spooktacular, I really enjoyed it. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe to wherever you're listening to this. If you're on a podcasting app or platform, or, you know, if you're on Nebula, yeah, keep following us and checking out other stuff like Meg was. If you want to find us on the internet, you can find me on socials like Instagram, X, Threads. I'm at HugItOut, HugEtOut.
I'm on all of the social medias as well, Instagram, Threads, that other one, at Trace Dominguez. You can also find me on YouTube if you want to learn more sciencey things, and you can find us on Nebula, and wherever you get your podcasts, you can find That's Absurd, Please Elaborate, or you can also find That's Absurd Show. You have a website where you can ask your questions, thatsabsurdshow.com/ask, or you can submit it down in the show notes. We have a link directly there, and you can, of course, also ask us questions by sending us messages directly on our social media. So thanks again for listening, and thanks again for just sticking around for all of the Halloween weirdness. Man, that was a lot. So thanks again. The editor for this episode is Kyle Sisk. The producers are Trace Dominguez and Julian Huguet. I hope you enjoyed it, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Nightmare away!